Hi, everybody. I'm Sue, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Sue.
And I have the privilege of introducing the speaker tonight. Young man that I've known for a while, and a while back, he had asked me, right before he was going to move out of town, if I would be a sponsor that he could call on the phone. And I said, no, I can't do that. I don't sponsor people on the phone. I said, but if you ever come back, jokingly, you know, maybe I'll consider it. And sure enough, he came back. And he did ask me, this time again, if I would be his sponsor. And I asked him one question, why me? And he said, because I got to do something different. And I liked that answer. And so for a little over a year, I've been watching a guy with a lot of willingness to do something different. And don't know what he's really getting from me, but I know that most of you who know me know I talk about hidden treasures. And this gentleman is definitely one of God's treasures in my life. And with that, Mark.
Thanks, Sue. That was a little over the top, but thank you. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. I was really nervous tonight. I still kind of am. I had changed my shirt like three times, and this is the last one I picked. So, yeah. A bear and a rabbit were taking a shit in the woods. I don't know many jokes, but that one I like the best. I take it too literal most of the time. Anyhow, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Driving over here tonight, my mom asked me, well, what do you speak about when you speak? And that's exactly what I told her. I says, what happened, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. She says, huh. And I was like, oh shit, don't come. Don't show up. Not yet. Give me a few more years. I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, 1971, end of August, and I was pulled out with the salad spoons. I got a scar on my cheek today. Sometimes you can see the shade or whatever when I shave, I can see it. So I came into this world, persevering. Perseverance is one of those, I don't know, I've been told I have it. That's how I started out, blue with purple fingernails. It was just a little alien coming out with a big freaking head. I mean, monster head. My daughter's got the same beautiful head too, and it's funny. But, and that's how I started out. So, I guess just fighting and, but mom and dad were young, we're not married yet, and didn't quite, mom was 17 when they met, so, when they got together, there was just one of those, not really knowing how to live. And my dad comes from a Mennonite family, his dad was a Mennonite preacher, and so, alcohol and drug abuse was not part of the family. I take that back. Alcohol and illegal drug were not part of the family. Prescription pills were A-okay. Grandpa was an addict from hell, and I remember he'd carrying a suitcase full of pills. And when I was a kid, and I started playing with his pills and stuff, and it was like, I didn't know what they were or why. But I have some experience with that as far as, watching him deteriorate and then take have a drug-induced stroke and come out of the stroke, and he was cured of pills. He had no pain anymore. I don't know what if he messed up his squash enough to make him healthy, but whatever worked. And so dad had to leave. He left. He didn't like that life. He left. Mom was just a follower. And I say that just to say that, they did the best they could. They did the best they knew how. I don't know the pain of their past. I know mine and what they did to me. part of being, my mom was sexually abused me from the time of birth all the way up to I was like 17, I think it was. And I've been to therapy and in groups and settings and stuff like this. And I've worked through that kind of woundedness. And I got to a point of, you know, it actually was Alcoholics Anonymous that gave me the willingness to, see her as a sick person, see her as sick. And then that I started praying for her. I didn't speak with her for 2 years when I figured I needed to separate and get away from the codependency and everything else that's going on. But it took me 2 years and avoiding, hiding, you know, just I don't want to talk, nothing to say. And I healed those 2 years. I was able to find her work. She just recently divorced my father and didn't have a job, so she asked me if I knew somebody, and I did. I knew some home health care people in the rooms, and I asked them who they worked for, and you know, I was able to help her financially. Since then, me and her relationship has been fine. I mean, it's all right. I'm living with her right now, so I guess it's good enough, right? She's actually the one person in this year and a half that I've actually count on. She's been there every time I've asked her to be there, and I wouldn't be here today in this state of mind and this much serenity without her, because of what she's been doing for me, taking me to work every morning, 5:30 in the morning. Well, off we go. So it's she did her best. I guess she knew whatever that was all about. My dad came from a family of 12, so he was one of the third oldest. So he was slaved out to feed the younger kids because grandpa had a bad back. So, you know, his life revolved around work. And firstborn son, I was a worker. I was a big kid, strong. And so, the last I remember was 4 years old, I was carrying bundles of shingles up on the roof for him, to shingle our house. I look back at my daughter when she was four, and I'm like, no freaking way. There ain't no way. You know, so that was the start. And then it carried on like that the rest of my life. My school years were school and work. Exams. My dad talked to the principals. They talked to my teachers, get me out of exams, or I got to take them early so I could take off that week and go to work for them. Summer vacations were work-related, all work-related. So that was his side. It was the, I don't know, somebody told me anything other than nurturing is abuse. And so that was the physical abuse part of it for dad. Mom was the sexual part. And so, you know, I was wounded as a, got a lot of work to do. And I've done a lot of work on that, so thank you to God for that. My drinking career, I guess, would start being, I idolized my father, and I was his little man. Began rather early. All the guys from work, all the crew and stuff would come over to the house. He was the boss, so everybody would come over and drink beer after work. And so at a really early age, I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember my 13th birthday party. I was at work in the summer, and we went to a tavern, a beer and burger joint, and celebrated my birthday with the guys. Shots, beer, burgers, shots, beer, burgers, shots. That carried on, and then went to my 15th birthday party was in a strip club. So that just, you know, I was the shit. I was a designated driver because dad and everybody else got too wrecked, but I was where I was at. I played hockey, started skating when I was four, started playing hockey when I was six. And I played all the way up through up the ranks through till I was 17. And then when I graduated high school, I went to work. The other guys I played with, actually two of them, or one of them, I know the other guy from Thunder Bay, but the other guy I played hockey with, Greg Johnson from the Predators, and that was a trip because he's in Nashville, I'm in Nashville. Then also they went off to college and careers through sports. I went off to work. There was two of us, the graduating class, that didn't walk across the platform, and we're not announced to go to college. We're just, here's Mark Zacharias. Thank you very much. So that was, you know, and so I went to work. That was a hockey, and hockey players drink beer. Canadians drink beer, period. Any opportunity. I mean, there was beer in the locker rooms. I was 16 years old running from Thunder Bay, Ontario, where we moved to after my first 10 years in Manitoba. Moved to Thunder Bay, Ontario, and I was 16 playing on a junior B team. They called me up to go to a tournament down stateside. I don't remember where exactly, but I know the coach and shit, I mean, got us all beer, cases of beer for the bus ride home after we won. You know, there was good trash cans full of ice and beer. And 16-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids. Boy, Dad was pissed when I got off the bus because I was staggering off, just all drunk and shit. But, so that was normal. And when I was 19, I was 17 years old, graduated high school, went to work full-time, became a foreman at 8. Well, but the summer I turned 18, I was a foreman, so I had a crew of 11 older men, 40-year-old men, much like myself today, that I was over. And, I don't know if it was the stress or what it was. I just liked beer, and I drank. And I sheeted a tire building upside down. Didn't know until like a week later. I was pulled into the office, and he says, "Your drinking's getting out of control." I says, "Really? Why is that?" He said, "I got to send the crew back to fix all your, turn the whole building upside down and redo it." It's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I did. And so then my solution then was church. It was church. And there was a independent fundamental Baptist church where they had code of ethics or whatever, bylaws and stuff, that women didn't wear pants. You know, as a guy, as a man, I fit right in. Shit, yeah, I wear pants all the time, so I don't have to worry about wearing skirts. Shit, and it was the kind of church and religious organization that I grew up with that my family was part of. The Mennonite women, I mean, a lot of them. My dad, my Aunt Kathy, were the only two that kind of defected. Just said, you know, they just left the church, but the other 10 were, stout Mennonite people, and so that's kind of, so I fit right in. That lasted probably 8 months, not even a year, I don't think. During that time, I burned all my music. I just tried to fix my drinking. And didn't work, apparently, because it wasn't shortly thereafter. It was, what, like I said, yeah, less than a year. I was just seeing if the gun barrel would fit into my mouth, if I could put my thumb on the trigger. Well, we don't have handguns up north, so it's all hunting rifles. And I was like, it does. Huh. Okay. Then I went to the bar after that night, actually. It's okay, it works. I go to the bar. So, 23, again, somebody said, well, it was my best friend's fiance that I messed around with at a party one night. And, it was a big fiasco. I was his best man. I was going to be his best man at the wedding. I was his godfather, his son's godfather, all that stuff. And, you know, in one night, it just kind of went away. And my excuse was my drinking. I was drunk, and because it made me do things and feel things that I couldn't feel sober. She was a very attractive woman. We had a lot of fun together. There was the three of us. I'd broken up with a prior relationship, so I wasn't hanging out with anybody at the time. It was just three of us, the best friend's girl kind of thing. You know, when he's off doing his thing, we're together. And it just, and it wouldn't, never, nothing would have ever happened if we hadn't been drinking. And so it was consequence of my action, and I decided to move to Nashville. And I'm going down to Tennessee. I'm going to find me a church. I'm going to get sober. I'll be good to go, blah, blah, blah. And so I moved, and I came down here March 1st, 1994. Yeah, 94. And proceeded with immigration happenings. And so, and it worked for a while. I found a independent fundamental Baptist church in Tennessee, of all places, in Hendersonville. And then I joined that religious cult. Sort of. You can't call it that, but the preacher was a businessman first and then a preacher. And it was funny as hell because, today I think he's driving two brand new cars. He's got three houses. How? I don't know. He's good with money. That's what he says. And so I did that for a while, and then, but it didn't work. It wasn't working enough. So I went out and went to the Wild Horse Saloon, actually, and met my future ex-wife. And I figured that would fix me. And we got married 9 months later. She was a spitfire, but she didn't drink. She wasn't an alcoholic. She didn't drink. So she would leave a six-pack of these freaking wine coolers in the fridge, and I'm like, how long have they been there? I don't know, a couple months. Why? And so, it wasn't hard for me. It wasn't hard for me because I'm a people pleaser. And so I wanted to, keep her happy, because if she wasn't happy, I wasn't happy. And I knew that from the start. I gave up arguing after a year of our marriage. And, I didn't drink. I couldn't drink. And my dryness, kept going down. Dry drunks are freaking miserable. And I got into a deep depression. And the only way that I could ever, I don't know if a deep depression, I was lazy. I'd get home from work and I lay on the couch till 9 o'clock and then go to bed. And this was daily. We lived in Colorado, in Denver, in a beautiful city, beautiful countryside. We never went anywhere. We never went hiking. We never went canoeing. We went skiing once in 4 years that we lived there. But the only time that I would ever get off the couch and want to do something was when she said, let's go to the bar and go dancing. I was like, hell yeah, I can drink. And that's what I did. And she, later on, she confessed that she would test me to see if that was true or not. And, she would change her mind after. But she would say, let's go to the bar, go dancing. And I'm, bam, off the couch, in the shower, ready to go. And I come out and she's, no, I'm just kidding. So that would last about 8 years. And then I found out she was pregnant. And I decided this is my last chance to fulfill my dreams of being the bachelor pad, of being, the fridge full of beer, having the boys over for poker night, just the whole six pack after work, living the dream. And I was 33 living the dream of an 18-year-old or less. So finally had it, and I went out and I left. And I stayed out. And, thank God for cocaine. Yeah, I mean, it. I found a bottom really quick, and it wasn't because of the drinking. It was just because I kept spending my child support money on coke. And that was enough to quit, enough for me to seek help. I went to treatment in Philadelphia for, and my therapist at the time, I was seeing a therapist. That's funny. You go snort a snort a line and then go in to see a therapist. And they wonder, you know, yeah, I'm attention. Yeah, you got me. They knew. And I thought it was for drugs and alcohol. But it turns out it was a treatment center for sexual abuse, sexual trauma and abuse. And I was in the mindset of, you know, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it could have been worse. There's been worse. But I decided to stay and see what all this was about. And it was a 45-day program, and I stayed for 45 days. And I learned people are people. And I had certain stereotypes for certain kinds of people that, you know, I figured if we drug more of them by the bumpers of our trucks through town square, they wouldn't come out. You know, that was just the ignorant mindset of of me. And I got to have a relationship with these people, like some of these guys, and these men are, you know, they're just men. We're just hanging out. We're all in the same for the same reason. We're not, you know. So it was cool. And so I come home and decided to start working with the wife, but it wasn't going to work out. So instead of doing it honorably and staying sober, I just figured, well, if I do this enough, if I start drinking again, she'll hate me enough and she'll just want to leave. So that's what I did. You know, that was a cowardness part of my being, is the fact that I couldn't face the music. I knew I didn't want to be with her, but I knew what not to do. How it wouldn't work. If I went to the bar, bought some dope, hooked up with a chick, she wouldn't want to be married to me, you know. So that's exactly what I did. And you know, it worked. She filed, and 4 years later, I finally got papers in the mail and I signed them. I wasn't even in Nashville or Tennessee at the time. I was in Kentucky working up there. And so, so that was my go-to. If I don't want to feel something, I don't want to face something, a drink makes it better. I don't want to be with you, so I'll make you hate me enough. How do I make you hate me enough to leave? Oh, yeah, drink. Because drinking, you know, encompasses the whole shebang. Every you know, all aspects of it. You know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's what we do. So it's what I do. It's what I did. So I went out again for 16 months. No, I had 16 months sobriety. I went out for 18 months. I went 18 months, I was out, and I found myself at a point to rob the store that I was fixing. I dug in my truck console of a borrowed truck. It was, I took the note as basically borrowing it because I was never going to keep it. And I dug through the door of the truck to see if I could find enough money to buy one more beer. And then while I was doing that, buying that $1.52 Steel Reserve beer, I was going to rob the place or attempt to rob the place and then get caught and do my rehab in jail. All right, that's a brilliant plan. Go to jail, cop an armed robbery charge so I can get sober, because I couldn't stop. I was at a turning point. Actually, just before that, I think it was Mount Juliet. I was living in Mount Juliet at the time, and I went to the meeting over there down the hill. Mark Paulson's old home group. And I pulled him out of the meeting, and I says, because I've been in recovery, and I knew that I couldn't get it. I said, Mark, I said, how do I find the spiritual part of the program? How do I get the spiritual part? You know, I know I need God. The only way I could stay sober is with God. Where do I find God? And I was geeked up because I had just, I think I just Yeah, I was geeked. I was still coked out. He says, quit drinking. What the hell do you mean, quit drinking? How do I find God? Where the hell is this God guy? He says, quit drinking. I said, shit. Okay. You mean I have to quit drinking first before I can find God? You know, and I was, so I, on the way home to my dad's place, I was living with him because, you know, ever since I left my ex-wife, I've been homeless. Never been roofless or shelterless, but always been homeless. Went back to dad's place. And on the way home, I threw out my two big, the 24-ounce cans of beer. And I figured, well, okay, I'll quit drinking. Then I'll find God. The next day, I'd drive him back around that same road going, where the frick's that beer at? You know, it was 90 degrees outside, and I'm fucking, you know, I'm looking for warm-ass beer on the side of the highway. I was like, nah, this is not cool. And I didn't quit quite then, but that time when I was sitting at the gas station, I was like, you know, if I go home, I can ask Dad for help. I can, you know, one more time. I gotta get away for one more time, because I couldn't break that habit. I was 3 days sober, 4 days drunk. 4 days sober, 3 days drunk. I couldn't break that habit. I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't live without it. And I needed to get locked up. And so it was jail or the institution. And so he helped. He said yes, reluctantly. And I went to Cumberland Heights, and I did that stint there for 14 days. They kept me for two more, so it was 16 days total. And that was enough. That was enough. That 2 weeks was enough. I went... I thought I had it. At that moment, in that time, I got it. I got sober. And I knew, I went to outpatient, Cumberland Heights outpatient, I did that. And from that point on, I stacked up 5 years, almost 5 years. 4 years, 11 months, and ish. So, but I did pick up my 5-year chip, which I probably shouldn't have, because just a short period of time before that, I wound up smoking some meth. I was lookout for the guys at work. And as I was watching and looking out for the bosses to come by, they said, hey, want one? Yeah. You know, 4 years, 11 months sober. And it's like, yeah. Not even hesitate. I was working in Mobile, Alabama. And, I wasn't working. I didn't work the steps, I don't believe, at that time, because I didn't have the spiritual awakening. I did not have the spiritual awakening. I did my deal so I could date. I can't, you know, I said no dating for a year. I said, well, I'll do the 12 steps, then I can date, right? Okay. And so there it was. I mean, I rushed through them. Hell, I got a goal. I had a purpose to get rid of these, get through these steps. And so I did them, and I was free and clear. Here we go. So I turned around and I smoked those two puffs of off the tinfoil, and I was like, oh fuck, what did I do? Why did I do this? I came back to Tennessee. I talked to my sponsor at the time, and he says, well, you this is what I heard. You've already done a 4-step with me. You're good. You're all right. It's okay. And I lasted a month. No, I'll take that back. 3 months. I came home and I stayed 3 months. I got evicted from my apartment. And so I had to go out of town. I had to go to work. I know, and that's when I asked Sue to sponsor me at that time. And I was in a state of, the only solution was more money. I had to have more money. That was it. I wasn't looking for serenity, peace of mind, you know, just the promises. I wasn't looking for any of those promises. I was just looking for more money. That would fix it all. And I wound up leaving and left y'all. And it wasn't long after I started drinking again. I didn't drink that time in Mobile, but I did in Georgia. And again, it was, you know, I don't know, thank God for meth, because, you know, that got me to the bottom quicker too, you know. And it wouldn't necessarily have been that day. My foreman I was, I don't know, he threw a chunk of stuff on my desk in my print shack, and I was like, okay, and I just went off and did it. Didn't even think about it. And so that's how I started out drinking. And it's funny because it's the progressiveness of the disease. Where I stopped is where I started again. So I was sitting on the curb at the gas station last time I stopped, buying $1.52 worth of beer. And I started like that again. I couldn't get enough. And I never thought I would be a piss my pants drunk, but that's what I turned out to be. I woke up one morning in my room in Augusta, and I did this big puddle of moistness on my bed. I was like, what the hell? Because I sweat when I sleep. So I thought, oh my God, I sweat a lot last night. Holy shit. Come here, Tyler, come here. Smell that. And I said, that smell like piss. He said, no, good. Doesn't. But it wasn't from my shoulders down. I mean, it was here in this area. I don't sweat my ass does not sweat that much. So I was like, yeah. And there I was. That was me. And it wasn't short thereafter. I was in the, I'm notorious for getting drunk at a bar and then passing on the back of my pickup and just waking up the next morning, in the back of my truck. Because that's the closest non-driving spot that I know. I mean, and it is kind of comfortable. That's why they call it a bed. So, but I woke up in the bed of my truck with my pants half zipped, soaking ass wet again. And I was like, God, really? I'm one of them? And, didn't stop, obviously. That was Georgia. So the methamphetamines and the alcohol abuse and everything else was going on down in Georgia. I got a job to go to Nevada, and I was like, oh yes, my saving place. I can leave this crank capital of the freaking world, head out west where they don't have, be in the middle of nowhere. I got a fresh start. I caught my first DUI in Oklahoma. Elk City, Oklahoma, and on the way to Nevada. That was DUI number one in 2013. And then, that's how it started off. So when I got to Nevada, I knew I had to quit drinking. And so I went to an AA meeting. I went to church. The next time I went, the direction of the meeting in the church, there was a bar called the Clubhouse, and I just couldn't pass the Clubhouse. And so I pulled in, and there I sat for 3 months. I sat there for 3 months in Tonopah, Nevada, out in the middle of Area 51. And I sat there at the bar. They had beautiful sand dunes. There was, there's a lot of stuff to do out there, outdoor stuff. And I sat in the bar, 200 miles from Vegas, 200 miles from Reno. There was nothing. There's nothing in this town but bars and a few slot machines, and that's it. And I spent almost $3,000 a week drinking in that town. I was making good, that was the once in a lifetime job where, I could pull in, I could walk away from there with $30,000 to $50,000 in the bank, easy. And I had to borrow money to come home. The methamphetamine there was like freaking candy. Everybody was cooking it, selling it, or using it. And I was using it. And I used a bunch. And I wound up going to treatment again because the company was gracious enough to send me to California for 30 days. And so I did that. And then I come home and, I was that guy who came home after treatment and used. I was sitting there in the freaking garage, the same place that I was at when I left, smoking at her. I was going to smoke this at her because, if I can't beat him, I'm going to join him. And so I was joining him, and so it was just this, I just about overdosed that time. My heart was acting funny, and my head was not good that night. And so after 30 days being clean, and then, yeah, it wasn't. But so that was my third treatment. Went to keep going. It doesn't stop. I went to came back to Tennessee with a wife, not a wife, thank God, with a crazy woman, her son, two dogs, and a 4-bedroom house. And I brought her home to mom in her 2-bedroom condo, and I tried to pack all that shit in there. I was like, fuck, this ain't gonna work. With some crazy woman. She was crazy. She was, and I was like, you're only, you know, the sick attract sick, and I was sick. Oh my God. I look back, it's like, holy hell, I was sick. And so anyway, she left. And the day she moved out of the house was the day I caught my third DUI. The second DUI I got because I went to go out of town, and I was chasing tail and drugs from the bar, and I caught a second DUI in Mills, Wyoming. So, Wyoming, Oklahoma, Tennessee now, and prior to that, Alabama, way back. So, yeah, I have a drinking problem. And I used to come home, and she said, well, just quit the meth. You're okay with drinking. I said, well, the beer gets me there. You know, that's this, you know, methamphetamine's never got me a DUI or never made me, you know, piss my pants in the back of my truck. And it never, you know, that wasn't, that's beer. That's the freaking beer. And I still like it. So 45 days in jail here in Davidson County was enough to get me sober enough to realize that I needed a spiritual solution. And thank God for that, because the 45 days was enough to dry me out. You know, start out with, well, the 45 days, no, it was enough. I couldn't do any more than 30 days. I got a lot of red chips at the house from, you know, when I came back to Tennessee in August of 13, I collected like 4-5 red chips, and I couldn't go more than 30 days sober. It was just enough. The Davidson County, or the, you know, whatever, the charge, the sentence was 45 days. And it was enough to, because I cried for like 30. And then that last 15, I actually started seeing the light of day again. To where I, you know, there was hope. There was hope after that. And so I came out with a new hope, a probation officer, and no driver's license. So now what do I do? So it was, you know, a lesson of powerlessness. I asked Sue to be my sponsor at that time because I needed something different. The guys that I was working with before in the previous, like all eight of them were, I'm not a big phone guy, and so I never called them, sort of thing. I didn't work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability. I probably could have, but I chose not to. Today, I'm choosing different. I want to try something different. And that's, so I asked her, and she said yes. So that's because I saw in her sponsees in the past, my previous 5 years of recovery, I saw lights go on. I saw a witness when they shared. They had tools. They had knowledge of working applications of the 12 steps. They would talk about the 6th and 7th step and how it changed their life. A story one of her sponsees shared in the meeting was very similar to mine as far as family members sexual abusing. And I was like, wow, you know, she had it rough. Hell, if she can do it, you know, and she's working with Sue, she's got something I want. At that time, that's when I asked her to be my sponsor, because I wanted what she had. I wanted what they had, too. I'm 18 months into this time. I have not rushed through the 12 steps so I could date. I am taking it one day at a time. The lessons that I have learned to this point First one, like I said, was powerlessness, which is the first step. Admitting that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. Yes, it had. And actually, you know, it has before. But actually, I guess the level of acceptance, because I could, you know, I could probably have bought a vehicle. I could probably have been driving. I could probably have, you know, obviously, it's a humbling experience to ask people for rides. And, you know, I've always known that I could always get a ride home from a meeting. You know, it was getting to the meetings. And that's where my mom comes in. Because I said, will you take me to the meeting tonight? She goes, yes. Without hesitating, she turns the stove off and takes me to the meeting. She drove me to Nolensville Road, or, well, the Woodbine Group was my old home group, and she drove me out there one night. Come home and finish cooking supper. You know, so it's always humbling, but I know that I'm going to be okay. My God has never given me all that I wanted, but He's given me all that I needed. And even through all my addictions, all my adventures, all that bad shit, he was still there. I didn't overdose. I didn't die. I didn't hang myself from that balcony at the motel in Nevada. I didn't hit anybody when I was hallucinating on the highway after being up for 8 days. He was there. He's been there. He was there in jail. I mean, the night I crashed my truck, he was there too. This homeless guy kept me company. You know, we hung out and drank beer while the cops showed up. You know, it was just, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And he said, yeah, just chill out. Get a beer? Yeah. You know, it kept me calm. It kept me calm enough to admit that I need help. And, it was just, he's always been there. So it's been easy to admit and to find acceptance in the powerlessness part, because I found God after, you know, I have to, because without that higher power, I'm not well. I don't do well on my own. And then time and time and time and time again, I've proven that to myself. Money and the pursuit of the pursuit of happiness and this financial freedom or whatever that I was seeking so many times when I would go out of town, and I would I couldn't live on the meager income I made in Tennessee. I needed more. And there was never more. There was always more to spend. I never brought anything home. And I would keep trying, and I keep trying, and I keep trying. It never worked. So, admitting I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. Then I came to believe, and I mean, I've always believed, but coming to believe and accepting knowing there is a God, but then accepting that I'm not Him, and trying to live life on that plane as far as, because I have control issues, I do. And it's really apparent, especially, in relationships when they don't do exactly what I think they ought to be doing or how I, and it's like, damn it. Thank God, period. Thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's taught me to, it's not them, it's me. And I can't, this, we say it every freaking meeting, right in the beginning, where it's, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. It's like, yeah. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it's like anything outside of me, because I can't change you, but I can change me. So anything outside of that is wise. I'm wise to keep my nose out of other people's business. It's a wise thing to do. And so that's where the wisdom comes in. Stay out of their shit, you know? Don't get involved, kind of thing. So it's like, it's worked. It's worked many circumstances, in many situations, it's worked. My control issues, I've probably still got them, I don't know. But no, I do. Yeah. I do. I have them. But I'm not as, yeah, I got them. So thank God for the program, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and right now I'm working through 6 and 7. And, you know how they say you spot it, you got it kind of thing? And I hate greed. I hate greedy people. My dad is a greedy person. Hate's a strong word, too. And I hate greedy people. And, you know, we're working through this book that deals with the 7 deadly sins and how they relate to the 6 and 7 step. And one of them is covetousness and greed. And it's like, okay, yeah. Okay, I may be greedy, maybe in some, you know, some small aspect. As much as I hate the other people who are, you know, and that may be me. Because I honestly, if I had, you know, I don't need, these people don't need 6 cars in their garage. But if I had enough money, would I? Yeah, I probably would. I'd be that guy. So it's like, yeah, that's why I don't like you, because I want what you got. And it's nice to see that and try to change it, try to do something different. You know, sloth was one of them that came up as far as procrastination being a part of that sloth. Putting off tomorrow what, you know, can be done tomorrow. And there's certain things that I just don't want to do. And I got a stack of bills at the house like that from a month of, I don't want to open the mail. I'm procrastinating open the freaking mail. It's still there. And so this week, my goal is to open and pay those people. You know, I got a little extra money, and so it's like time to pay the piper. you know, and it's a great way of life. My daughter now is 12, and so she... We had our first daddy-daughter boyfriend talk last week, and I'm present for that. When she was a baby, I was not present. When she was young, I was not present. I wasn't. I was the bath master, because I had served supervised visitation, so she would, not through the state, but through, I couldn't see my daughter without my ex-wife's permission. So she would leave me with Shelby, and for 2 hours, I was able to see her like once a month. I usually wound up coming home to see her. And so for those 2 hours and stuff, I was the bath master. So I was good at giving her a bath. And that's about it. Everything else, you know, she fell off the bed because I was watching TV one day. I was like, oh, shit. Kind of, you know, so I'm present for her today. You know, she turned to me last week, and, you know, that conversation. She confided in me what she was feeling and what she was doing and wanted my opinion. You know, I know it's probably not going to last long, but I like it. I like it when I can be there. I can't be there physically, obviously, because, you know, consequences of my actions. I lost my license for 2 years, and I crashed total off my vehicle. I can't get to her as much as I'd like to. But the phone is a wonderful invention, and we're able to speak, you know, just I'm able to be there, period. And that's not because of anything that I've done on my own. That's through God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I guess, you know, being through 6 and 7, I'm looking forward to the next 5 steps. But I'm in no rush. I'm in no rush because the spiritual awakening, God is always going to be there. And so I don't have an end game. I don't have an end game today to where I'll do this when I'm done. I don't know what's going to happen when I get there. I just know what I see in others. I want what they have, so I'm going to do what they did. If it takes me, I don't know. It's going to take me as long as it takes me. But eventually I want what they have. And it's one step at a time, one day at a time. And that's, it's been fun so far. I appreciate y'all letting me share. Thanks.
Bubbles, would you take us out?
Let's have a moment of silence. That's how we hope. We've been earshot. Notice we're not being earshot. And thank the one who keeps us all together and keeps us sober, who is
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
He's coming back. It works if you work it.
Sucks if you don't.